I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join John Provo. He's the executive director of Virginia Tech's Center for Economic and Community Engagement in Blacksburg, Virginia. Provost Stewart, the multi-disciplines that include innovation, technology, helping industry harness the power of technological advancements for the state of Virginia's common good, while engaging faculty and students in the art of place-based community problem solving. Come along and join the conversation to discover how a Virginia Tech partnership implemented the first aerial drone food delivery with their flying burritos, how a student-led startup, Torque, grew to become a global leader with their autonomous truck control systems. Provo shares numerous other equally fascinating stories of how Virginia Tech's Center for Economic and Community Engagement is not only transforming Virginia's commercial enterprises, but simultaneously the rest of America. John Provo.
I really enjoyed my journey getting here, but now that I'm here, I really think about it a lot. I looked this up before we started talking, and by some estimates, maybe less than 7% of the country live in college towns. And that's, I think, actually a pretty generous estimate. They're all different, but they're all special and come with some unique opportunities of their own.
Interject for a moment, because I travel around the country, go to a lot of university towns.
Sure.
And you can almost smell it, taste it, feel it before you get into the heart of town, because there inevitably is a semi-vibrant, viable, happening downtown scene.
There's stuff going on, and some of that is the vibrancy that our students bring, for sure. It gets a little quieter when they go. There's a few less folks around, but I think year-round, there's also a special vibrancy of the folks who live here all the time. Yesterday, I was at the gym, and I started talking to this woman who is a national expert in fermentation about what's the latest thing in craft beer.
Wow.
Yeah. But then the next day, I saw her coming into a yoga class, but I was busy talking to another woman who is a national expert in bed bugs. And she told me things I did not want to hear. You know, if it was Wednesday, there's a farm brewery I would take you to for blues night. And I'd introduce you to the head of the country's largest transportation research institute.
A little bit more about that. We were just talking about what goes on there.
That came out of the ground, I guess, close to 30 years ago. And it's grown to be the single largest research enterprise at the university. They've got some unique facilities where they can simulate weather conditions. They've got sort of urban road simulation, rural road simulation, snow, rain, sleet. Everybody in the car business comes there.
It's implicit you have some pretty tight partnerships with manufacturers.
Yeah. So, you know, certainly the car manufacturers use this. A number of different, groups have come there testing autonomous vehicles. We're just down the road from Volvo Trucks. They actually have the largest truck plant in their whole system in North America, just down the road from us.
Right.
And so we have a lot of partnerships there. They're actually rolling electronic trucks right around our region. Some of the control systems for that kind of work are being pioneered. A company that's a partner with Daimler Trucks called Torque, that actually spun out of a student competition team years and years and years ago and is now a global leader in this stuff. You know, the people you meet and the things that they do in their day job are really kind of fun, kind of conversation starter. I think you're not far from where we first started flying burritos. The first commercial delivery of food from an aerial drone was accomplished actually on the grounds of the Transportation Research Institute.
Was that a beta testing process?
Yeah, but now we are into the real delivery phase. And so Christiansburg, Virginia, just down the road, there's a company called Wing that spun out of Google's X program years ago. Wing came here originally to test and do beta stuff, but they've actually stayed. They become a part of the community in that regard. So if you pick up your food delivery app for certain services, you can push the button that says drone delivery.
So it's happening.
Yeah.
It's real.
It's for real. Yeah.
Oh.
And I think there's a history of this place. You know, we were in 1993, if I can put us in the Wayback Machine. Time Magazine ran a headline called this the most wired town in America.
I heard that.
Yeah, yeah. So it was something called the Blacksburg Electronic Village. Wow. And it was an early pioneer in all the Web 1.0 kind of tools.
How did that happen here?
You know, the right people in the right place, I think, and there was a great commitment about making the investments in the bandwidth to make these things happen. You know, these folks also, I think, make a very good case that we actually had the first e-commerce transaction. It's still there. There's a place called Vintage Cellar over on the other side of town. They transacted circa like 1993, some wine delivery. It was, a little bit of history.
Did that evolution inexorably ramp up and it's still going, or was there kind of a disconnect for a while?
Well, I think there's always a new thing and a next thing. So, you know, the drones are a great example of that. Some of the other transportation research. Okay, so we've got a football team, like a lot of schools. We had a professor who was doing testing on, he's a biomechanics professor who's doing testing on concussions and things like that. And he was putting sensors in. And on his own hook, he started essentially evaluating the differential results in from different types of helmets. And what that grew into quite recently was really the first rating system actually for helmets. They started with ball helmets. I've got a bike helmet that they rated because I don't play football at my age. But, you know, there was nobody doing that, which kind of, you know, surprised me. And I think, you know, being in a small place like this with a lot of smart people roaming around town all the time, it really creates those moments. You've got that space.
And talk about engagement with undergrads. Is that an ongoing and an intrinsic part of the model?
Well, for sure. So at all levels, we've got about 30,000 students. We're a couple weeks away from graduation as you and I are talking today. We will miss them. Town gets very, very quiet. Not just the lines in the restaurants or whatever, but also the events. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of great service projects the students are involved in. Both students and faculty really populate a lot of the organizations around the community. Mm-hmm. You'll go to the farmers market on the visit before you're done. You know, that facility, actually, when I moved here 20-some years ago, was a parking lot.
Oh, wow.
The farmer's market was just set up on the sidewalk around that. A landscape architecture professor and some of her students got together with some folks in the community and really built the lovely facility you're going to see today. And as you walk around, there are different connections, different alumni who are vendors in the market, folks who, you know, have, you know, great ties past and present and future with the university.
That's really cool. Back up to high-tech, beta testing, and problem-solving, robotics across the board in America. For one reason alone, I did some stuff with Salinas Ag Tech guys that are doing robotic agricultural. And they explained that the motivation for them was pure and simple, a labor shortage. The workers are not there. So for a corporation to retain its viability, it has to come up with alternatives, and one is artificial intelligence, robotics, and non-human operations.
Well, there's a lot of technology that's helping us do things better and helping us do things when there aren't enough people to do things, for sure. And just pulling out to 10,000 feet or something, you know, there are actually more people working as bank tellers now than there were before ATMs were invented.
That's really.
Isn't that wild? Now, there's some bumps along the journey to get to that. I won't diminish that at all, but it's definitely, you're right. You know, the technology, you know, we produce here, whether it's, and I should say, you know, the autonomous system stuff, essentially the controls and systems that a company like Torc creates, you know, we're not at the point, and we're not rushing to get to robotic trucks driving themselves, but, you know, there's incredible safety advances, and some of us have these in our cars already, right?
Yep.
The lane assist and things like that. And imagine as those continue to roll out and get further and further advanced in the trucks, and that's a lot of what that company's doing, for example, with autonomy.
I was at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and I'm with these techies that are developing and working on through universities robotic-driven formula race cars. 3 years ago, they said they could do 30 miles an hour, and now they're up pushing close to 200 with no driver, with a robot.
That's pretty wild. I'm thinking about, you know, those cars we had when we were kids or something that ran around a slot track.
Yeah.
Suddenly everything is big.
But, you know, what's the end purpose of the exercise? I naively thought it would be the self-driving car or the where there's no driver driving the cars.
Yeah.
And they go, not really. I mean, it could be some point. But in the short term, it's developing smart vehicles. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what you were alluding to.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great convergence for us. I mentioned earlier, you know, the Transportation Institute is big. It's also like one of the leaders nationally and even internationally around safety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of their big claims to fame is multiple decades worth of what they call naturalistic driving studies. So in all these different sorts of vehicles and conditions, they have people who volunteer to have cameras in their cars. And they have great information about all the gosh darn crazy things we do when we're driving. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, not you and me, right? But right. Those other people, right?
But it also would probably be reaction times.
All that stuff, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, creating like the convergence between better understanding about safety and some of the challenges there and being able to put autonomous features into vehicles to assist us mm-hmm. while the drivers are in the loop being safer and getting from point A to point B without damage or injury.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit more about things that most fascinate you. Like if we could go out and go meet with somebody today in town, where would be your first choice? What would we look at and talk about?
Man, that's a good one. Well, you know, we're sitting in my office right now. It's not a very exciting name, but it's in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. When I came here 20 some years ago, mm-hmm. I guess I already admitted to that, this was up and running. But just 10 years before that, this was maybe one building in a cow field. And there wasn't Class A office space mm-hmm. for anybody in the university or otherwise off of campus for like 100 miles. So what I would probably do is I would take you over to visit the godfathers of this thing. So there's a guy named Joe Meredith, another guy named Ray Smoot. Ray was the university's controller at one point, was the head of our university foundation. And Joe was an industrial engineer by training, worked at the shipyards down in the eastern part of Virginia, but was a VT alum and was brought back really to design and build this thing out of nothing. And I think the park isn't like technology, right? Okay, but it's been the place where we've housed and launched things. So for example, that torque company I mentioned, they started in an incubator space over here. There's another company my team's working with right now that's over in Christiansburg, Virginia, called Meld Manufacturing. They are like one of the few companies in the U.S. with U.S.-owned IP for large-scale metal additive manufacturing. So you remember like those 3D printing machines that would give you like a plastic toy or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
This lady and her company, Nancy Hardwick's her name, print tanks.
Real tanks.
They're working with, you know, defense suppliers and stuff like that. So I take you to go meet Joe and Ray, talk about the vision. We go meet Nancy, and the original guy who was the founder of Torque retired at a very young age not long ago, named Michael Fleming, and he's still around town, mm-hmm. so we try to scare him up too. And I think that would give you like a great arc, and we'd get to see sort of where we were and where we're going. And I think that's what's fun about being in a place like this for a while too.
That's so cool. And it's really fascinating. I'm still trying to kind of deconstruct and visualize. You're a part of the university, correct?
Yes.
And I do know that like Cal Poly State University, mm-hmm. they just moved a bunch of you guys off campus because mm-hmm. they want to focus on physical structure facilities, on teaching mm-hmm. labs and whatnot.
Sure.
Is that part of why you wound up off campus?
Well, I mean, I think we're building stuff all the time, mm-hmm. right? And my group's always on the road. So having us in this external setting is a pretty logical one. I like it, though, because I got a bike commute back to my house from here just on trails all the way.
That's pretty cool.
You guys might have seen the Huckleberry Trail when you're out, and it's a sweet little rail-to-trail project we all enjoy around here.
You are paid by the university.
Oh, sure. Okay, so my role in the center, it's what we call a university engagement center. I work with all the different colleges, and we're what's called a land-grant university, so there's a big history and a strength in agriculture and engineering. But we've got a medical school and life sciences research. We've got liberal arts and performing arts and architecture. And so I work with everybody.
And do people approach you?
Well, it kind of works both ways. Yeah, we've been at this for a while. So folks in the community and in the extended region usually know where to find me, but mm-hmm. I also make myself pretty visible. And we stay engaged in different organizations, community organizations, organizations trying to grow business, trying to facilitate the creation of some of this wonderful, you know, forgive the biological metaphor, but ecosystem that we're all contributing to here. And so I work for the university. We do a lot of work. We're on grants and contracts, sometimes with federal agencies, sometimes with state or local partners. And we often go out and find things together, right?
I mean, so you might not know what you're going to discover till you go out and look.
Yeah. We often sit down together with community organizations and write grants and proposals. You know, we just finished one a couple weeks ago with one of our community partners that works in technology development and helping startup businesses and other things like that. And it's a large state proposal. We're hoping to advance the growth of life sciences here. There's been a lot of investment in universities' capacity there, and we're trying to help make sure that gets out into the community and into the market.
How often are you in a classroom presenting and sharing and dreaming?
As often as they let me. I do actually teach at least once a year. We've got what we call the Economic Development Studio. And so in that project, I usually get somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 graduate students in what's called urban and regional planning. And they're mostly studying economic development or some kind of related topic in that degree. And we take on a real challenge for a real set of partners. Last year, we did a program with with the National Main Street Foundation and the Virginia Main Street Program. And this is like a collection of things around the country. Mm-hmm. And most of your listeners will have one of these not too far away. Yep. So a lot of them are more rural, small town, but there are actually a great growth in urban ones. These are essentially programs that work to organize community-based business kind of districts. And so, and the National Main Street folks have been looking at this for a little bit. The premise really was to think about what do those sorts of communities that host Main Street programs or other communities who are seeing a lot of change in how work goes now, what's out there for them in this whole new world of remote work and hybrid work? A lot of us are doing things differently than we were just a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And the technology and the acceptance of hybrid or remote work, it's fascinating, and nobody's really got a good handle on what it means at the community level. Like in part, you know, I've got one of our partner organizations just hired a guy who had been, and he's going to work on recruiting more talent for the community. But this fella had been in our community for 10 years. All that time, he'd been working remotely.
Oh, wow.
Nobody knew him, right? You have stories about these folks. Mm-hmm. I was talking about remote work. I went on a bike ride with a group of people at the beginning of COVID, and I'm talking to this one guy, and he's like, I'm trying to figure out what he, you know, I don't want to be that, well, what do you do? Tell me about, you know, that. But we get there, and he's like, yeah, I've been working remote for, you know, 20 years. But I think this whole thing is really made it really interesting for communities to think about, you know, who's already in their midst, what are the opportunities to come, let's say a small community like the one you're visiting, you know, this week, and, you know, explore different ways to do the work that you love to do in a place that you will come to love.
Looking forward, I know another amorphous question. Mm-hmm. One, deductive reasoning, you're an optimist.
I do my best. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how do you deal with those challenges and those frustrations? Because you're closer to the grindstone than most.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm really lucky to work with interesting people. I'm really lucky to go to communities that want to take a look down the horizon a little bit. We may not end up exactly where we thought we were going, but I think what I love about the places we work is, you know, the interest in going forward. Folks are often frustrated about things these days, but I think when you sit down and have a real conversation about the future, not on social media, but a real conversation we're having right now, you find folks, you know, have plenty of hope. They just want to have some way to think about their ideas, validate their ideas, and get going.
Yeah, harness and employ.
Yeah. You know, there's a few other really interesting things around here that you might want to walk away with an understanding of. So, you know, Virginia is a big turkey growing state, and our university, as we talked about earlier, is deeply involved in agriculture all across Virginia as the state's what they call senior land grant university. So for years, we've been the receiving home of all those hardened presidential turkeys. You know, they get to live out the remainder of their days, probably about 2 miles. I just realized I'm on the radio and I'm pointing out the window, 2 miles west of us. And that's been something that's been going on, I think, for at least 15 years or so, something like that. There's also a lot of innovation going on in this life sciences space, as I mentioned earlier. We're actually doing a lot of cool things in the university, and companies are coming here both to work with us, but also to tap into some of our graduates and connections like that. You never know when you're going to run into these folks. I was sitting at lunch and had to share a table with someone the other day, and it was a young guy who had just graduated from NYU and had moved down here to work at a company you passed by on your way to my office called Intuitive Surgical. They're making a robotic surgical arm for global dispersal. A little bit further out in the country, there's also another company called Revivicor, which is actually a pioneer in the still emergent field of animal-human transplantation, so growing hearts that to save people who are waiting and dying waiting for transfer. So a lot of cool things happening here, have been for a long time. I didn't even get to mention there was about half a year in 2003 when we had the fastest supercomputer in the world right here. Some of our computer science guys had strung together 1,100 Mac computers. And this is how you made a supercomputer back in the day. It's a different world now, but that was like very like low-cost, cheap, pioneering stuff. They did that at a fraction of what other sort of competitors were doing.
What a trap.
You know, it's like skyscrapers, right? Mm-hmm. You don't get to stay the tallest skyscraper for very long.
Yeah.
You know, back in the 60s, one of our industrial design faculty actually came up with a really small innovation in you need sort of a bifurcated needle to effectively inject smallpox vaccines. So like back in the 60s, some guy working on this campus here came up with this little thing. And so again, these folks are around in our community. They're involved and their students are involved in our nonprofits, our community organizations. You might bump into them at the next table in the restaurant. There are groups, there are lectures, things happening all the time. There are groups. There's a Tech on Tap group that takes them out to all the breweries. I know you visited some of those on this trip and have these great discussions about the latest thing in science. We've got a really active, what's called a lifelong learning college here. A lot of universities have this. We just started a few years ago, and there are hundreds of retirees or near retirees working with our faculty in sort of adult ed kind of things, lifelong learning stuff. And so it's just a great synergy between the community, the companies that come here and work here, and our faculty and students.
Your sister campus, Roanoke, you have a major medical center there.
We do.
And partnerships and brainstorming going on there too?
Oh, sure. We interact with similar partners in the Roanoke region, just like we do in the New River Valley. We've actually got some other campuses around the state. And really, I think, you know, the big picture about this, when you're a large institution in a small place, is that you've got the opportunity to extend connections to other communities and bring new and different people back here all the time. Sometimes it's companies coming to test at the research institute. Sometimes it's faculty going back and forth between Roanoke and Blacksburg working on life sciences or medical research, or their company partners going back and forth, or people just coming to hear the story like you did.
That's so cool. Well, unfortunately, we're out of time, which means I had to come back and we'll dig deeper and go meet some people. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Well, thanks. I appreciate your interest and thanks for the time to talk today. For further information, visit cece.vt.edu.
One more time.
cece.vt.edu. And my name is John Provo. I'm Executive Director of Virginia Tech's Center for Economic and Community Engagement.
I love it. Thank you, John.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.